Welcome to Radically Transparent, the number one podcast for the modern day marketer, presented by Octopost, the only social media and employee advocacy solution architected for B2B. Each episode shines a light on the inner workings of B2B leadership, including what keeps successful CEOs, CMOs, and VPs up at night professionally. The conversations are real, raw, and authentic, all while revealing the unfiltered, not-so-known truths of today's most interesting marketers. Introducing your host, Jennifer Gutman.
Hello, world. My next guest is an AI content governance and brand alignment strategy expert. With over 20 years of experience growing companies in the technology sector and recognized as a thought leader in the areas of AI, DEI, and content governance, it's no wonder that his dynamic, captivating, and knowledgeable marketing experience, who is known for sharing insightful stories from his many years working with some of the biggest tech names in the world, including Google, Facebook, and Twitter, was invited to take the hot seat today. So please join me in welcoming Christopher Willis, Chief Marketing and Pipeline Officer at AcroLinks, to join the show. Christopher, are you ready to get radically transparent with me?
I am. Let's do this.
Let's do it. So listen, before we do it, disclaimer, I want to know if you could maybe give us just a brief look at your professional journey and how you actually found yourself as CMO, CPO of AcroLinks.
Sure, I can do that. It's a matter of how far you want to go back. I mean, I think the interesting thing about me is that this is a non-traditional path. I graduated from a liberal arts college with a degree in theater. I was concerned midway through my college career that maybe I wouldn't get a job with a theater degree, so I added a minor that I thought would be helpful, philosophy. So really, I should be a school teacher. But I played with computers as a child, was able to get out of college, get a job in technology, and progress through technology into product management, into sales, and eventually into marketing. And here we are now. I spent 20 years, almost 20 years, in mobile technology from the very early days, 2002 timeframe, creating the first package mobile applications, to creating a cross-device platform, configuration platform, application creation platform into mobile cloud testing. And then identified a problem that I had, which was a need for my best writers to be better writers. Super smart people, writing in English as a second language. And the end result cost a lot of time and money from an editorial standpoint, just making it readable. And I discovered AcroLinks, this interesting platform that allows you to align content with content guidelines in the earliest stages of creation. And I didn't just want to buy it, I wanted to work here. And so that's what happened. And it's been a great experience. I'm 4 years in here. I don't know that I ever thought I would be 4 years in here, but I love what I do and where I am and the opportunities that have been afforded to me. I have all the traditional responsibilities of a marketing organization, but I also get to be part of the sales process, the sales organization, working with our CRO around pipeline management, making sure that quarter plus one, quarter plus two, are healthy so that as our sales organization is 100% focused on closing business in any given quarter, we also have our eyes on where we're headed as we move into the future.
Absolutely. That's a big thing. We're going to touch on that later on in the show. You hinted at it as you were explaining your journey. And I was just, in one quick sentence, could you give us the value AcroLinks brings to your customers?
So we help create fit content, content that's impactful. So if you, very simple question, what kind of content do you create? Why do you create it? And how's that going? And in most cases, it's created for a specific business purpose. And it's reaching some of that. If we can help to create that content in clarity, consistency, character, to be better aligned with your audiences, you're going to get better business results.
Touche. So listen, you have an interesting background. You're spot on. It's not conventional, but it's also very interesting. Theater, philosophy, and here we are today. I can't imagine with somebody with a philosophical mind that you would sleep easy at night, but I'm going to throw our famous question at you, right? As a marketing leader, what is keeping you up at night professionally?
It is that future visibility of pipeline. And when you start looking at pipeline that way, as a practice, as part of my job, as a way that I get paid, I think in a lot of companies, pipeline is a thing that happens. Like salespeople in general know that they have to create things and progress things, but they're focused on closing and the company's focused on closing and marketing is focused on creating and giving so that it gets closed. And there isn't that day-to-day view of what's happening in right now in Q3 of this year. But that's what I spend a lot of time looking at. And when you start spending a lot of time looking at that, like I live in a rolling four quarters forward and things happen in the future that I can see right now. And it creates a lot of anxiety. And I mean, ask me a week ago how I felt about the next couple quarters. And it wasn't great, but it's amazing what a day can do to change that. How several progressed deals and a couple of new created opportunities can change the future of a business. And so today I wake up on a Monday morning, I feel a lot better than I felt last Tuesday. And most people in my position don't have this visibility. And so this is not a thing they worry about. It's a good and a bad. I think for our company, it's fantastic. For me, it's a little bit stressy sometimes, but I love it. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you got to love it to keep doing it, right? Because if you don't love it, then what's the point?
Exactly.
So I want to shift for a moment because I've been doing my due diligence on some of the things you've been up to. And what I'm seeing is that there are a lot of companies out there today that are creating new categories. And we know that companies that create new categories are usually valued much higher than those that produce incremental innovations, we can call it, right? And that's why they typically enjoy, right, much faster growth. But Chris, keep me honest, because you know, we've spoke a little bit offline and I know creating a new category is really hard work. And that might be an understatement, right? What's the one thing you have learned along the way that you wish you knew when you started this journey? And maybe if you could take us a little bit on where your head's at with category creation for your organization, that would be helpful.
I think that as a young person in technology, and we started a company back in the 90s, we created some products. And as a younger person in the business, the product is what matters. Like that's, we're building a product and we're selling a product, and that's what creates the value of your organization. And I think that's kind of true. Like it's important that you have a solid product and it's important that your customers love it. But from an outside view of your business, your strategy matters. Where you're placed matters. How you are compared to the rest of the market matters. And I learned an interesting lesson back in, must have been the 2011 timeframe. We had been Pixis Mobile. We were rebranding to become Verivo. We were shifting to create a much more holistic message around it, the platform play that we were moving into, going from being an application company to a platform company and trying to align everything together. And when we launched the new brand, it happened to coincide with the work that was being done on the Magic Quadrant in which we were tracked. And so Pixis Mobile was going to move somewhere in the quadrant as Verivo. We did not have a product launch. We had no product innovation between the 2010 Magic Quadrant for mobile enterprise application platforms and the 2011 Magic Quadrant. And yet we moved up and right, which is the direction that you want to move in a quadrant, means that you have better vision and better execution. And how did we do that? Why did Gartner think we were a better company? And it was because of the work that we did around the identification of what we are, how we do it, where we fit, how we sit in the marketplace, all the things that don't have to do with the product. So yeah, cool. We got a great product and it put us on this quadrant, but now we got to run a company around that. And the importance of being able to identify where you fit, why you fit there, how your customers value you, why somebody would buy you over a different solution in a different category. All those things matter quite a bit to the outside world. So if I feel like if I had known that in 2003, we would have been in a different place in every Magic Quadrant we were in, because we just focused on all I want to do. John, I just want to tell you about the product. Let's just talk about how amazing this product is. And we were years ahead of the market from a product standpoint, but we were still falling into the niche quadrant in the Magic Quadrant because we weren't a particularly dynamic company. We were just doing an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. Once we became that company, they recognized the whole package. And then we were competing with much larger companies. It put us into a whole different area of business.
So listen, so in terms of, you know, categories, category creations, you know, adapting to a category that already exists, staying in one that already exists, creating something new, in your experience, what happens when investors or competitors or even your own community doesn't really understand the category that you're creating or trying to create, or like what I would envision even worse, right? They don't really want to be a part of it. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, so it's interesting. The company that I'm now at, AcroLynx, has been around for a very long time and has not benefited from an established category. What AcroLynx does is pretty far away from what a lot of businesses do. And so it means that every conversation has to start with an introduction. I have to introduce myself. And I'm the only one doing that. So over time, I'm going to try a bunch of different ways to describe myself. But in every case, I'm doing it in my own language. And so I made this up in a lab and I'm testing it on you. And I'm waiting to see if your eyes light up. And if they don't, I'm probably going to try something else in 6 months. And we're going to keep going and keep going and keep going. And what makes it worse is that now there's probably 4 or 5 companies that are kind of like what we do. And each one of us are out there trying to create an identification of what we do, making it easier to understand what strategy aligned content, content governance, all of the things that we say, make that easier to consume. And it's a hard road. And it also, from a customer standpoint, makes it difficult for a customer to A, understand it, or B, value it. Who are your competitors in this content governance space that you say you're in? Well, there aren't any direct competitors. But you said that you are this cost. How can, I mean, if you're worth that kind of money, why wouldn't you have competitors? It must not be that important. Again, we do have competitors, but they don't message the same way that we do. So if we're using our words and they're using their words, we look different. We're making it harder individually on ourselves. And that's where the idea of trying to create something that transcends that comes up. Now, the problem that we have in my case is there is a current category that one of the larger analyst firms has created that includes us. But I believe that it is not where we fit. It is not where the value is for us. And my discussion now is both with the analyst and with the rest of the companies in our space. If you believe that this doesn't fit you, can we do better? And can we do better together? Because I've been doing this by myself for 4 years and I haven't gotten any traction. But if we all do this, like I'm willing to do the work. If we all identify as this, then it's a bunch of companies all saying the same thing. And yes, that'll create some competitive friction that in some cases doesn't even exist today. And we'll be introducing some competitors that we prefer not to introduce into our customers.
Yeah.
But it also increases the overall value perception of what we do. Because, oh, there is a vibrant marketplace for what you do. There are vendors that are doing this. And that starts to change the perception from the audience, from our customers and our prospects, that this is something important. This is something relevant. This is something that they need. It's not just a neat gadget that was created in a lab somewhere and now you can try and play with it, but rather something that companies actually need. It shouldn't it shouldn't be as hard as it is, but it's just a lot of work to make this happen.
I really appreciate you opening up about the journey and getting so radically transparent about it, because I think in so many ways, it's right. It's category creation. It's a long and unpredictable road. It's not a new concept, but it's also one that is often debated by leaders, right? At what point do you embark on this journey, or do you not embark on this journey at all? Are you digging a rabbit hole? So if you're thinking back, or, you know, let's say, able to give one tip or piece of advice, if there's another CMO out there listening right now, whether to embark on category creation or not, because you mentioned, you know, it's been 4 years, you know, how are we moving the needle? What would that piece of advice be to another CMO with your same mindset in terms of do we create or to create or not to create, or we're halfway in, we're not halfway in? What would you give?
I mean, the answer is you have to. This is a thing that will transform your business. So we're at a stage right now where we're getting ready to increase the trajectory of our growth. And I've spent $0 on awareness over the course of the time that I've been here. We've just spent money on demand gen, but I want to spend money on awareness. I want to make it easier for us to get that first meeting. I want to make it easier for us to progress into discovery, and make it easier to prove value in the middle of the funnel, because people know who we are. I mean, you don't need, when Drift calls, you don't have to have them explain for a very long time who they are. You've heard of them. Like, I understand who Drift is. I understand why you're calling. I might actually take a call because I recognize your brand name. That's fantastic. Versus every phone call has to start with, we're Acrolinks. No, it's pronounced Acrolinks. Okay, we're this. This is what we do. Okay, let me explain what I mean. And I think in terms of Salesforce doesn't call their prospect and say, we're a relational database with multiple entities that all interconnect. We're a CRM system. Oh, okay, I know what CRM is. Cool. Why are you different? Well, we're in the cloud. Fantastic. I like the cloud. Let's talk. And that kind of acceleration changes the game. I want to increase our sales velocity by being more known. But before we can be known, we need to make it easier to know us, to put us in that box. And in this case, what I'm working on is really changing a frame of reference. Like I said, there is a category, but I don't agree with the category. The category thinks about the wrong noun. So just to give visibility, the analysts think that we are an authoring assistance solution. And there's a bunch of companies in that space, but the most famous is Grammarly. Grammarly and other authoring assistants help employees like you or I create higher quality work product individually. That's what we do. What we do, and the reason that I think we're different than that, is that we help enterprise content achieve its goal. We act on a different noun. We're not here to help the writer necessarily, although we do. We have a sidebar that actively helps writers create their content. But we also act on content as a whole, as an asset inside the enterprise. And we're trying to increase the value of that asset by making it used better, making it produce better results. So in essence, we're a content impact platform. We're not an authoring assistance platform. And that change in reference, you can find other businesses that identify with that end result more than they identify with the writer. Everybody cares about the writer because obviously that's where the content comes from. But where do we go from there? And that end result, there's, you know, 10 or 12 companies that I believe care more about the impact of content than about the writing of it. And if that's the case, that's that shift that we need to find to have a reason to have this conversation. Like, and me saying it by myself, like I can stand on a hill all day and yell this, but it's a lot more interesting if I work with analyst firms, if I work with the companies in this space that would identify as frenemies, like competitors, or direct competitors, to get everybody to make noise about this category, because it's good for everybody. It makes something identifiable by the customer, and it makes it important.
So what, Let's dig into that for a hot second, right? What does that relationship or what's that conversation look like with the analyst? Or, right, how are you engaging or flipping the script, if you will, on trying to have them kind of perceive your brand in either a new category or a different category? And, you know, because how you framed it to us just right now, it seems like a no-brainer, right? It seems so simple. Like, yeah, that makes so much sense. Is that what's happening on the field?
It's never going to happen quite like that. It'd be great if that was the phone call. I was like, oh my God, you're so right. I didn't think about it that way. It's much more collaborative than that. I need to be able to show that there is this change in the frame of reference. Why are we even having this conversation? I need to show that there is a relatable trend that people care about and that people are going to agree on is happening that's requiring this. So the digital shift, the move to more digital touch points, the importance of the written word in the business, all drive the need for greater content impact. It's not just creating high quality content. In this space for years, it's been the word quality. Like, it's all about content quality. I have a lot of problems with the content quality word. Quality is subjective, first of all. It's also a commodity. You get it in Google. You get it in your Gmail. You get it in your Google Docs. You get it in Microsoft Word. There's all kinds of content quality tools in the world. But good quality content doesn't necessarily perform. You need to think about who you're communicating with, and you need to create that content for that audience. And that's that clarity, consistency, and character that I talked about. Mm-hmm. So that larger, instantly relatable trend is your content is the most important asset that you have besides your product. Are you getting your value out of it? And that, you know, making the content the center of the conversation. And if I can get them to believe that, to follow that, then we start talking about things, you know, who else says this? So that's developing, you know, other folks that believe in this, and that's bringing in our competitors, and that's bringing in our partners to be able to say, yes, this resonates with me. What makes this different from a taxonomy standpoint? What language is tied into this particular category that doesn't live in the other places? What are the use cases that make this markedly different? Eventually bringing in customers that have already adopted the product because of this angle, not because of who they said we were, not offering assistance, but for the compact and the content impact, to make the case that this is something that you need to be talking about to your customers, because that's what this is about. Like, let's get the analysts to agree that this is important, that they need to talk about this so that they're providing vision to their customer base. And they won't do that unless they believe that this is something that will change the experience for their customers.
Makes a lot of sense. And I have to say, Chris, this has been an episode, a breath of fresh air, if you will, because the way that you're explaining the value of content second to product, I've actually never heard that be explained in that way before. And I'm like in a marketing organization, right? And to me, it makes a lot of sense. So what I want to do now, I want to shift the category creation hat. I want to put it to the side. And again, thank you for opening up and getting so deep and radically transparent with us about this journey that is not easy. And I want to take it to a little bit more of a fun place, maybe, or maybe less, depending what's not on there. But what's one thing that you could tell us about yourself that's actually not on your LinkedIn profile? And keep in mind, you just told us that your path was untraditional. So we know that. And we know that you were formerly in show business and a philosopher. So...
sadly, it's kind of on my LinkedIn, but not as a job. I'm a CrossFit coach. So I get up every morning at 4:30 to get to the gym to provide fitness coaching to adults, every day, which is kind of different.
So let me ask you this. I'm going to curveball your fun fact. So I admire CrossFit. I tried it once and I barely made it out of the gym. I'm more of like a Zumba kind of gal. So with that being said, curious, in your experience, Is there any correlation between what you do as a CrossFit coach or in how you motivate versus how and what you motivate in the marketing room or in the marketing strategy arena?
I think so, because my job, regardless of where I am, at the level that I am in my career, is to provide context, prioritization, safety, knocking down barriers to success so that people can achieve their goals. And that's what I just described is how I go to work every day. That's what I do with my direct reports and my team. It also sounds a lot when you say it out loud, like what I'm doing at the gym. I'm trying to make sure that people are prepared technically to get through a fairly complex, fast-paced workout without getting hurt. The average age at our gym is probably 44. So it's keeping people, adult, grown people, doing things in ways that they're not going to get hurt so that they show up again tomorrow and get the most out of this program, get to spend time with their friends. If they come in and they don't get that context, if they don't understand how to do it accurately, if we're not guiding them to find their success and achieve their goals, they're just going to get hurt and not be able to do it again. So it is kind of the same thing, I guess. But here's the fun loop back to the beginning.
Let's do it.
Why do I do things that way? Because I have a theater degree. And you think maybe I acted because, of course, I'm amazing. I don't. I'm a terrible actor. I don't know what to do with my hands. It gets very complex and confusing. I directed for 4 years.
Okay.
And being a theater director, what am I doing? I'm casting the right people. I'm finding the right people, staffing them into the play, giving them the context and the blocking, giving them priorities, giving them some level of guidance, and then getting the heck out of their way and letting them do their job. And that's exactly how I manage today. I find the best people that are available to me, people that I shouldn't be able to hire, that will come and work in my organization because this is my approach. I'm going to give them an opportunity to do the things they've always wanted to do and be able to be super successful doing it. I don't need to be the best. I'm not an I manager. I'm a we manager. I expect that everybody that I hire knows how to do their job better than I know how to do their job. I got that directly from my theater background. I don't need to be the best actor. I need you to be the best actor.
I wanted to try to think quickly of like a fun, like lights up or, you know, curtain close or, you know, exit stage left. But that was a phenomenal. Thank you for that. Thank you. And I wasn't witty or fast enough on that one. But thank you so much for sharing that insight. If anybody listening wants to speak category creation, wants to connect with you, learn more about AcroLinks, Chris Willis, where and what platform is the best place to find you?
Based on where we're talking right now, the easiest place probably is on LinkedIn, at CP Willis on LinkedIn, but also through the AcroLinks website at www.acrolinks.com. That's acrolinx.com. I guess anywhere. I'm not really on TikTok, so.
No workouts yet on TikTok?
Not a lot.
No. All right, Chris. Well, thank you so much for getting radically transparent with me today, and I look forward to having you back soon.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Radically Transparent podcast brought to you by Octopost, the only social media management and employee advocacy platform architected for B2B. I'm Jennifer Gutman, your host and director of social strategy here at Octopost. And if you love today's show, we'd love if you subscribe, rate, and give a raving review wherever you get your podcasts. For more discussion on B2B social media marketing, be sure to follow Octopost on LinkedIn. And of course, to gain access to all our free social media marketing and employee advocacy resources, head on over to our website, www.octopost.com. Until next time.